हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 84. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued. Sarvakama had a son named Sudasa, whose son, known as Saudasa, was the husband of Damayanti. Saudasa is sometimes known as Mitrasaha, or Kamashapada, because of his own misdeed. Mitrasaha was sonless and was cursed by Vishishta to become a man-eater, Rakshasa. King Parikit inquired, Sri Sukadev Goswami, King Parikit said, O Sukadev Goswami, why did Vishishta, the spiritual master of Saudasa, curse that great soul? I wish to know of this. If it is not a confidential matter, please describe it to me, Sukadev Goswami said. Once Saudasa went to live in the forest, where he killed a man-eater, Rakshasa, but forgave and released the man-eater's brother. That brother, however, decided to take revenge. Thinking to harm the king, he became the cook at the king's house. One day, the king's spiritual master, Vishishtamuni, was invited for dinner, and the Rakshasa cook served him human flesh. While examining the food given to him, Vishishtamuni, by his mystic power, could understand that it was unfit to eat, being the flesh of a human being. He was very angry at this and immediately cursed Saudasa to become a man-eater. When Vishishta understood that the human flesh had been served by the Rakshasa, not by the king, he undertook 12 years of austerity to cleanse himself for having cursed the faultless king. Meanwhile, King Saudasa took water and chanted the Sapa mantra, preparing to curse Vishishta, but his wife, Marayanti, forbade him to do so. Then the king saw that the 10 directions, the sky and the surface of the globe, were full of living entities everywhere. Saudasa thus acquired the propensity of a man-eater and received on his leg a black spot for which he was known as Kalmashapada. Footnote 18. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to verse 24, since Vishishta was omniscient, he realized that the Rakshasa had cooked the human flesh and not the king. Considering this, he made the curse last 12 years. Saudasa was preparing to curse him. He threw that water, taking the form of the fire of anger, on his own feet, since it would burn up all the directions if thrown elsewhere. Thus he is called Kalmashapada, meaning having a spot on his leg, and Mitrasaha, meaning enduring the words of his wife.
Mm-hmm. My sister was omniscient. He knew that this was unfit. He also knew who cooked it.
No, but that's after.
He was omniscient. He should have known this too.
But you can't say that as when so. Omniscience is when you apply yourself, then you know that. It's not that he's omniscient everything at all times, otherwise how do you function with people? It's when you apply it, then you. So, he applied it on the food, saw that, cursed the king, then after, and thinking about it, then understood the other part.
Should have, anyway.
We can say always should have. We should have, yes. How you say?
But he is not us. You kind of expect more.
No, but the point is, we're the ones expecting more.
From him.
Yes.
Should?
But the point is as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out, if we apply this, better to apply this ability to find weaknesses in others, and then what would be the actual appropriate way of dealing to ourselves rather than to others.
Yes.
Yes. So therefore, then he's done this, and then, because you expect, you're with the king, you expect high grade things, you expect everything like this, then it's not, so then why would it be like that? You know, so then, therefore, then he cursed him for that thing. Then afterwards he understood that. Right? So then therefore he went to the forest, he adjusted it so it wasn't, he's permanently a Rakshasa, to just these 12 years a Rakshasa, and then he went to perform austerities for 12 years also. Like that. So we have to catch is that they're persons in that. They're not just categories that, no, they have to do like this. Because then the point is why do they have to do like that? Is because then I'll be inspired. But so then it's only about ourselves. But what about them as themselves performing their own activities and trying to perfect themselves? Right? Because for us, then we're just taking it, we're just a general devotee, you know, like that. But then there's other devotees, no, but they've been around for, you know, 30 years, and it's like, why are they like, you know, and we're just saying, no, I'm just doing what I can.
Maybe it's because we think if we will be around for 30 years, we might not be, we hope we won't make those mistakes.
Yes, but the point is that we are performing our activities, trying to do the best we can to be Krishna conscious. But then others are judging us. No, we should be at a higher standard because they think in 30 years you should be like this. So we're thinking, oh, he should be like this. Mm-hmm. But the point is that's not our position. Because their position, like what we said before, remember we're saying about, what was his name? The fish wallow.
Saubari
Muni. Oh, how can he get distracted? Because we're thinking if we got distracted, how what it would take to do that. But the thing is because they've reduced it down, then at any point if the senses go out to anything, it's so intense because their focus is so much stronger. So actually, it's a symptom of being more advanced, not less advanced. So we'll take it, oh, if I was in that position and it happened to me, this is what would be. So that's the problem is that we're saying they should be on a higher standard, but at the same time as we're projecting our own perception on that position. So, but one can't do that because they're on a different level. Is that make sense?
So what should be the proper perception?
Proper perception is without Krishna consciousness, then all these things come up. Because we're taking it that there's such a thing as material perfection. That, you know, materially it could be like this, but we see from Brahma on down, there's always problems. You know, it means, in other words, in today's society, Lord Brahma would not be allowed to be the head of society. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know? And so then...
You know. Depends on which country.
Huh?
It depends on which country.
Yeah, but I'm saying just basically, is you know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing is that, you know, we wouldn't allow, you know, so many. You know, Narad Muni, you know, he makes all these different things and this one and that one. And, you know, it's just, so by our standards, that then we would project and then we would say nobody's qualified. You know, except for ourselves, of course, and our, you know, who we consider important in our sphere of influence. But in a sense, so the thing that it points out here is that doesn't matter how qualified they are. Without Krishna consciousness, is always going to be a weakness, because only in Krishna consciousness is one on the platform of pure goodness. So there's no passion, ignorance. But even you're situated in goodness, then the problem comes is that there's still some aspect of the modes there. Right? So there's always going to be some fault. So that's the thing to do. Right? Like you see here in the previous one, is that that was the one here. about gambling. Gambling, Prabhupada says gambling is an art. So the Pandavas lost everything, you know, because they didn't know this art. So devotees aren't necessarily very good at the material things. And so, therefore, the materialistic activities are actually not good for any living entity, since all living entities are supposed to become devotees and go back to Godhead. You know, so that's the point. That's why the devotee avoids all these things, because they just make one more materialistic. But, you know, but generally, you mean by how you say yesterday morning's discussions, you know, flavors. Oh, gambling, how is that? How are we glad that? This is that? What was, you know, it just goes on and on. And then, what's that? What's the art? How does it, you know, it's just, no, the point to learn is that materialism has an art to do anything. And so those who are good at it, then they prosper. But the point is they also become more materially entangled. And so because of that, that's why devotees don't get, they're not so worried about material perfection. They do the best they can by Krishna's grace. They apply themselves to do the best for Krishna, not to become good at this. You know, I want to become good at, let's say, management so that I can do service to Krishna. That's okay. No, I want to become good at serving Krishna, and I may engage management so Krishna will give the intelligence. Does that make sense? So there's a difference, because the one can distract while the other one...
It takes practice, because we always glide down back to the normal.
Yes, that's the thing. So if we look at ourselves and then we see here, well, the Vishishta could make such mistakes, so therefore, without devotional service, anybody can. So the point is no, oh, but if he's on that level, how will I, you know, ever get to that level? We're not trying to get to his level. We're trying to get to the level of devotional service. So for us, we're looking at Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, all these kind of individuals. Mm-hmm. That their devotion, then that makes everything work. One is they're protected from the material energy, and two is they actually the most successful. But they're the most successful just in service to Krishna. It's not that they're thinking, I'm so successful. Right? That was what's pointed out, is by Krishna's grace they understood that they have that position. So that's what we're trying to do here, is shift that whole sense of structure as devotional service means. Because we're looking at it that there's impiety, there's piety, and then we're engaging the piety in devotional service. But the actual, what we're trying to get to now or understand is, no, there is piety, which means Krishna consciousness, and if it's not Krishna conscious, it's impious. And of the impious, there's bound by a gold chain, a silver chain, and an iron chain. But the point is you're bound. Like that. So that's the point. It's not that the pious activities are the recommended activities. We engage them in Krishna service. That's where we're starting. No, the activities of devotional service are what are recommended. But because people don't see its connection to devotional service, they take it as material and therefore pious. But something's piety is exclusively its connection to Krishna. So we're trying to make that switch so that we really appreciate what's going on in this, you know, the Lord's activities. Otherwise, if we apply these material concepts to the Lord's activities and the devotees, that's where we're going to run into problem. So we want to be cleared of that beforehand. So we understand, connected to Krishna, that's correct. Not connected to Krishna, no matter how nice it is, you know, by material perfectional standards, it's useless. Is that? Yeah, so if we can get across to that, then it'll make the pastimes go through very easily. Otherwise, we're going to have questions about a lot of things. Yes?
I was contemplating on that. Yesterday, as we said, English phrase, you know, give the dog a bad name, hang it.
Yes.
So it's that thing. But the other thing we see here is that the king, he had a... It was interesting that he was blinded, but because he had a qualified wife, she helped him. So there's always that point that we should always have good safety nets around us.
Yes, yes.
So there's someone who can...
Yes, yes, good association, yes. But we look at it, it's good association. The thing of husband and wife and that was previous discussions that is there. So it's, of course, their team, they work together. So that's the point. When it comes to Dharma, that's where she's strong. And when it comes to spirituality, that's where he's strong. So that combination, right, means he's, you know, knows what is to be done, but sometimes to be able to do it, that needs that support from the wife. But it is also then in the same way to see things in a transcendental platform as opposed to just material, that's where the husband then helps the wife. Right? So then, yes. Yes. Yes.
It appears also that the difficulty is that, you know, there's so many pastimes described in Bhagavatam, and it leaves an impression in our own consciousness.
Yes.
So it's not necessarily what Bhagavatam says, but our own perception.
Mm. Yes.
And then we leave it, like for example with Akrura. Akrura has a bad name among the devotees.
Right.
Because he wasn't happy, you know, the gopis were not happy with him.
Right.
But actually he's not bad.
Yeah.
He's just who he is.
Yeah.
But in our mind Akrura is like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's there. It's like we take on the, how you say, we take on that mood of the sense of justice and retribution of the gopis without taking up on the 100% surrender of the gopis to match it. Yeah.
At least we take that.
At least, yes, yeah, something's connected to the gopis. Yeah. We're doing something that they did, right?
Yeah.
You know?
In general, ISKCON community, you know, when issues take place, and then we usually have the tendency of, you know, having this mentality of doing the aropya, you know, on the other person.
Yes.
So basically, we should not do in the first place. And secondly, we should do it if we are in a position of being the authority of that.
Yes, means if we're in a position where we can have influence on, that's then when we apply. It means, in other words, seeing the fault, it's when we're in a position that we could correct it. But just seeing faults, that's always easy. When you have no responsibility, it's so easy to see anything because you're not responsible to get it done, so anything you think of sounds great. But when you go to apply it, that's when the difficulty comes up. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the position. So in other words, we don't find faults if we're not responsible. And if we're responsible, then we may find. Yeah. Right. You had something?
Yeah. Like any of those material qualities which we have, if we stress beyond some point, any relation we have will break up. So, or any quality like which practical observation is, we are not applying in Krishna consciousness and we are not applying in a particular relationship, then that may hinder.
It may?
Hinder our relationship at what
point. Yes, yes. But I mean, ultimately, relationships can be maintained based on the Krishna conscious element, because all other elements will disappear. What are you saying? Because what relationship we have here is not the relationship we'll have in the spiritual world, based on the gross and subtle, nature, the conditioned nature. That constitutional, it'll be based on that. Though there'll be that friendship will be there, that aspect. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
But also the fault that we're pressed with this short-term vision. We see everything short.
But what's short? What makes it? What's the difference between short and long?
As in that we always think that there should be some immediate adjustment.
That's there, but I'm just saying it philosophically, what's the difference between short vision and long vision? Yes. But?
Krishna consciousness.
So in other words, the primary is the long-term vision. And the secondary is the short-term vision. Because that's about our conditioning and our position. And then the shorter it is, then the more it becomes self-centered. But only when we can see a connection to Krishna, that's actual long-term. Right? Like that. So we're trying to get it up to that position. Now there's those who'll have an understanding of long-term, but not on the Bhagavan platform, only Paramatma or Brahman. And so then they'll get farther. But it's still not, it won't be as much as the devotees. The devotees, that's always the best. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Once King Kalmishapada saw a Brahmin couple engaged in sexual intercourse in the forest, being influenced by the propensity of a Rakshasa and being very hungry. King Saudasa seized the Brahmana. Then the poor woman, the Brahmana's wife, said to the king, "O hero, you are not actually a man-eater. Rather, you are among the descendants of Maharaj Ikshvaku. Indeed, you are a great fighter, the husband of Madayanti. You should not act irreligiously in this way. I desire to have a son. Please, therefore, return my husband, who has not yet impregnated me. O king, O hero, this human body is meant for universal benefits. If you kill this body untimely, you will kill all the benefits of human life." Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 28. The body of a human being is extremely valuable because in this body one can understand the instructions of Krishna and attain the ultimate destination of the living entity. The living entity is within the material world to fulfill the mission of going back home, back to Godhead. In the material world, one hankers for happiness, but because one does not know the ultimate destination, one changes bodies one after another. However, if one gets the opportunity to possess a human form of body, in this body he can fulfill the four principles of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. And if one is properly regulated, he makes further progress after liberation to engage in the service of Radha and Krishna. Right? So then properly regulate means within the devotional line, right? You may have regulated according to Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, but now you're regulating in accordance with bhakti. This is the success of life, to stop the process of repeated birth and death and go back home, back to Godhead, mameti, to be engaged in the service of Radha and Krishna. Therefore, taking human body is meant for completing one's progress in life. Throughout human society, killing of a human being is taken very seriously. Hundreds and thousands of animals are killed in slaughterhouses and no one cares about them. But the killing of even one human being is taken very seriously. Why? Because the human form of body is extremely important in executing the mission of life. That's why it's important. That's why it's not allowed. Because it's meant for using the human form of life for God consciousness. But if they don't, then they're like animals, then what's the big deal? Right? So it's a big deal because human life is meant for spiritual upliftment. Sri Sukadeva, so that's her argument, is that the human form of life is meant for elevation, and because there's desires, and one's trying to go through them, to fulfill them to in such a way to remove them so that one can focus on the spiritual. So she's saying she desires, you know, the children, so therefore he should allow them to do this so that they can attain the ultimate goal, right? If they weren't Brahmins, that's another thing because they might not be worried about that anyway. But as Brahmins, that's their focus, right? So, yeah. So that's why even amongst humans, killing a Brahmin then is the worst. Okay. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Here is a learned, highly qualified Brahmin, engaged in performing austerity and eagerly desiring to worship the Supreme Lord, the Supersoul, who lives within the core of the heart in all living entities." Srila Prabhupada comments, "The wife of the Brahmin did not regard her husband as a superficial Brahmin who was called a Brahmana merely because he was born of a Brahmin family. Rather, this Brahma was actually qualified with the Brahminical symptoms. Yasya ya lakshanam proktam, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.11.35. The symptoms of a Brahmin are stated in the Shastra. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness. These are the qualities by which the Brahmanas work. Bhagavad Gita 18.42. Not only must a Brahmin be qualified, but he must also engage in actual Brahminical activities. Simply to be qualified is not enough. One must engage in a Brahmin's duties. The duty of a Brahmin is to show the Param Brahma, Krishna, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Pavan, Bhagavad Gita 6.12. Right, so knowledge is the beginning stage of being a Brahmin, but actually applying that knowledge. So in other words, one takes up the position, then one qualifies oneself in that position through knowledge and practice. Then one applies it as one's actual value. Right? Yes?
We see in the modern system of education, knowledge is given for so many years, but then it may be applied then, you know, later.
Yes.
So how quick should we apply the knowledge we're getting, like Shastra?
The means the depends on whatever you know that can be applied, that should be applied. You know, if there's something that you need to have a certain amount of knowledge before you can apply it, then you don't apply it before. You know, like an example is in astrology, then it says without studying for 2 years, you shouldn't apply it. You know, you can practice and this and that, but you don't, you know, tell people, oh, hey, I can do your chart and stuff like that. No, you have to be studying nicely for 2 years. Then only you may have enough understanding to start to apply. Right? So, but other things you apply immediately. You hear that chanting Hare Krishna, so we immediately apply. So the direct devotional activity, those we can apply immediately unless there's a qualification like deity worship. It means we take part in the artiks, but to actually go on the altar, that requires some. So immediate application is the Vedic standard. So that means even in the Gurukul, they're applying what they know, but it's within that context. So being in that context, one may respond differently than one will outside the Gurukul. So it's within the Gurukul, one's trained according to how one's responding to the Gurukul. But you actually identify the nature once they graduate from the Gurukul, then what do they do? Does that make sense?
No, I'm not exactly sure.
Let us say in the Gurukul, then give two examples. Very good at, puja and all the yajnas and doing all these things and teaching the classes, but when they get out, then they get involved in management or business or something like that. Others, then, they spend their time in the school being, let's say, I don't know how you would define it, but like the school mascot or something. You know, it's just, they're all they do is make trouble, right? And then when they get out, then they're a full-time pujari for, you know, the next 30 years. So you can only tell actually the nature when they graduate and what they do with it. But in the school, however they're responding, that's how you train them. In other words, they have a nature. So there's a good chance, let's say that other person, he gets into business, but he'll like puja, and so he may do a daily puja at his house or take part in the temple or things like that. But it's not his occupation. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that is you have to see what's there, or, you know, you go by what's there. Like you have one student, he's there, and all the arts he's very expert at, so you think he's an artist. But then when the school opens a shop and all that, and he gets an opportunity, he goes in there and he basically lives in the shop. So he makes it happen. So actually, that side was more. It was just that, you know, does that make sense?
Because the opportunity wasn't there.
The opportunity wasn't there, or it's the art side of business. Mm-hmm. You know, the actual selling of it, how to arrange it, how to do all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you have to see that's the point, is that one learns knowledge, and then as the opportunities are there, then you see how they apply it. Because all knowledge could be used as an occupation or as a hobby. So it's just a matter of what combination they actually end up with.
What's prominent, what's secondary?
Yes, like that. Because it may be very important to them personally, but not as an occupation. Like, let's say, music's very important to them personally, but they're not going to be a musician as an occupation. Like Hanuman, you know, he's expert at music, but you don't ever see him doing it as an occupation.
What's his occupation?
Sorry?
What's his occupation?
What's his occupation? Getting things done for Ramachandra. Right, so you never see that come up. You know, even when he's in the palace, he doesn't do anything there. You know, when they caught him in Ravana's court, he didn't say, hey, I'll sing you a song or something. You know, just, you never see it. But he's very expert in music. He's expert in Sanskrit. He's expert in so many things. Like that. And so that just becomes part of the culture aspect of the person. So in other words, you have all this training, basically all that will be cultured. But then something from that will be your occupation. Does that make sense? That's why Varnashram sometimes becomes hard to understand, because if they see some point anywhere, then they'll say, oh, that's the occupation. No. The person is the main thing, and then how they maintain themselves, that's the secondary aspect. Like that. Does that make sense?
And Marat, yes. The adults, we just deal as they deal at the present.
Yes, they deal at the present, because however they deal at the present will be according to their nature, but then it's also what stage of purification their nature's in. Because, let us say, because the occupations are combinations of the modes. So then, if you add more ignorance to anything, then it will bring it down to basically your modern culture. You know, it's either, you know, some economic base and based on some art, some skill. Right? So skill-based economics. Because both of those, it means business and arts have mode of ignorance in it.
Yes.
So now, depending upon how much, what's the proportion, it may be more or less in something. So one might be, you know, more intellectual in one's shudra activities or business activities, or, you know, it's just like you see hardcore businessmen, it doesn't matter what, if it'll make money, but then others, they're worried about, you know, eco-friendly and all this kind of stuff, and they go hiking or, you know, bike riding or, you know, something. You know, all the guys in their office don't use cars, they just use bicycles. Or, you know, they have that. So there's a touch more of goodness there, but the predominance is still in business. So, like that, same with Kshatriyas. There's more goodness you have, like Yudhishthir. You know, drop it down a touch and you have Arjuna, you know, and the twins. Drop it down a little bit more passion, you have Bhima, you know. So, like that, you're going to have that combination. So, what's not really well understood is you can't change nature, but the point is you can cover nature. This is a very misunderstood point. I mean, like, you know, get out there with the, you know, the, what do you call it? What would they use? You know, chains, iron rods, get out a chainsaw if you like, ball peen hammer, you know, all that kind of stuff, and have a rumble over it. This kind of level of, you know. But the point is someone, let's say, has a Brahminical nature, but by association, then we see there's so much ignorance that when they join Krishna consciousness, at best they can kind of do Shudra stuff. And even that, they might not be focused enough. But as they become purified, then they're able to see the finer points, and then it comes up through the business, comes up through the management, and comes up eventually to the Brahminical place. But it'll take time to purify. Well, others then will come up and stop wherever it is. But any position that the devotee's in, when he takes up pure devotional service, he comes to the platform of pure goodness. So that means, though, he has the knowledge and skills of a particular occupation, but he will be acting as the best of the Brahmanas. So his mentality, his mood, how he'll do, even he's doing whatever he's doing, it's as a devotee. So that becomes prominent. So if one's less purified, you see more of that occupational flavor as an identity. But with time, you see the ashram means just the devotee aspect. So that's where it becomes confusing, because it's covered, and then you also have that as a devotee, then they can come up where their behavior and that will be that of a Brahmin, though they may be doing business or something. Does that make sense? So this becomes confusing. Like, just for example, in behavior, it would be hard to find someone who is as cultured and as gentle in their personal behavior as Ambarish Babu. And you could probably say he is the most wealthiest and best socially situated person in the movement. like that. There's others, but I'm just using him because it's just so gentle, so unassuming, like that. So that has those higher class elements. So there's more purification there. So it's not just the family like that. It means generationally rich, there'll be something, but it's more because there's no false ego. Right? So then that's the devotional side. So that's the whole point, is he's still engaged like that, but when you deal with it, he's a devotee. He's not a businessman. Well, sometimes you see a devotee. He's a devotee, but he's a manager, or he's a businessman, or he's an artist, or he's a Brahmin, or, you know, that kind of thing. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of the level of purification.
All level of businessmen.
Sorry?
All level of businessmen.
All level of business. Yes, yes, yes. So you have, it means, that's why you have to know, I think it was, what was at one point, remember, forget what we were studying. It was something analytical. I think it was in third canto. But it was referring to the point that they were analyzing all these things, the 24 elements and all the different stages of creation. But it's all going on at once. You study them separately, but its application is all together. You know, just like in Gita, you study karma yoga on its own. Then you study jnana yoga on its own. Then you study the two of them combined. Then you study dhyana yoga on its own. But then buddhi yoga means you combine all three. Right. So that's the thing, they're all going on, but if you haven't studied them separately, you won't know actually how the whole thing works. But you're never going to apply it just like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it becomes, if one approaches it like that, then one can appreciate the Varnashram system. So as you were saying, is whatever the person is responding right now, that's how you deal and train. Now, if that continues in that line, you just continue that move. But if you see it starts to adjust, then you see, is can they do that? It means, can they apply that knowledge and skill and be Krishna conscious, and with, you know, and maintain the same good qualities? Then that means this other aspect or that further direction is good. But if we see that they get off into this other thing, but the improper qualities come up, then it may not be. They may have the skill, but not the character. So you have to see the balance, because nowadays it's just if you have the skill, then you can do it. But in the Vedic, if you don't have the character, it's not it's not taken seriously. Knowledge and skill without character is never appreciated in the Vedic. Does that make sense? So it's even more than an application, it's what's the character. So that means you have to be developing the skills and the character at the same time. You may be developing the character through the skills, right? Or you may be developing the skills through the character, whichever is going to work at the time. Does that make sense? Yeah. Then one works with the individual. Then it makes it very easy, because it's about individuals. It's not, oh, it's so many different. No, it's just, this is the range, and wherever they fit, you just deal at that point. Does that make sense? You know, so you're starting, this end is Antyaja, and this end is, you know, Paramahamsa. And so just that path, then you just, how far people go, on what aspects. So the devotional can go all the way through, but the occupational to just have its own positions. Is that okay? Yes.
Just to clarify, you said you can't change your guna, but you can cover.
You can't change the nature of somebody.
Nature.
But, you know, like we said, let's say someone is Vaishya by nature, you're not going to change that. But you can bring it up to a higher level.
Okay.
You know, or let's say their character. Let's say that somebody, you have somebody who, you know, is confident and all that, is just really in your face. So, but that's annoying. So what does that mean? It's impure.
Mm-hmm.
But now, let's say you purify that, they won't be in your face. They'll just be gregarious or straightforward or honest or open. Does that make sense?
Sure.
You know? or let's say someone as a occupation before they join, they're a cook, but they're cooking all kinds of nonsense. But then once they become a devotee, it's not that that goes away. Now it becomes purified, so now they cook according to the Vaishnava standards. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So much of the time you see these different things, or like, you know, and the Prabhu mentioned, sometimes something's not available, so when it is, then they take it.
Sure.
But, you know, it's just like in the community, temples there, deities are there, they need to be dressed every day and everything like that. How many in that 300 to 500 devotees in that city, you know, who are technically called quote-unquote community, come forward to take part? Right, so therefore, either there's a lack of purity or there's that nature is not there. You know. Does that make sense? You know. Or, you know, there's some other considerations. You know, in the way of they'd like to do, but, you know, somehow or another, you know, they, how you say, drive a garbage truck, so you have to be out on the street when you would be doing the puja. So, you know, something is there. But the point is how many actually even consider it? So it means that nature is not there as an occupation. As they devotionally develop, maybe they're interested, but that's, you know, then that's coming from that side, from the Vaishnava side. So one has to be able to see these two at once, the devotional and the varnashram.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, because that's what we're running on. So if you can understand both and how they work and how they can work together, then you can make Daiva Varnashram work. Because there's no need to identify.
Mm-hmm.
Classify as an identity. It's need to identify so that you know how to engage somebody. That should be done. Prabhupada mentioned that, you know, in so many letters, that to the managers, the leaders, they should be able to identify someone's position in Varnashram and be able to engage them.
Right.
You know, so that's just basic principles of management. Otherwise, if you put somebody in the wrong job, then it's never going to work out. So how can we say you're a good manager?
Yes.
You know, it's like, you know the technique, but if you don't know how to engage people and who belongs where, then one's understanding is not complete.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the case of Dronacharya, he was a Brahmin and he was teaching military.
Yeah, but it still is Brahminical. He's teaching military. That's his knowledge. Prabhupada says a Brahmin can learn anything, teach anything. So that's the area of his interest.
That's the standard, that or it was an exception? Like,
no, it's a standard. It's a standard that whatever is your area of expertise and knowledge, that's what you teach. You know, where your interest lies. That's why you see in different schools they'll have a different focus. So in his school it was the military science, but it's not that he didn't train them in the character and everything else like that. It means your story of that test, I think it was the final test. You know, when it was about, he put in the tree, and there's a fish, like that. You know, I think it was like that. And so, then he'd call everybody up and ask them, what do you, you know, draw his bow and arrow, be ready to shoot, but don't shoot. And then he'd ask them, what do they see?
The bird.
Right, and depending upon, oh, it's a bird, yeah. And depending on what they would see, then that would be at what level they actually graduate. You understand? So, what was that? That was focus. That wasn't skill.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is if you have focus, you will develop the skill. And if you don't have the focus, you won't develop the skill. So character is the basis of skill. But nowadays that's not taken. Because one is knowledge is... It's what knowledge you learn is a good chance it has nothing to do with what you'll do as an occupation. So therefore... What is education? It's an occupation for someone else to make money. You understand? Yeah, so... like that. You getting what? So, you'll see is that for most, that's not necessarily an area they do, but knowing that, then that's what it is. Some it's music, you know, the Gandharva Veda, his was Dhanur Veda, some maybe Stapana Veda, Ayurveda, you know, then all the Jyotish and all that, others it'll be Kalpa, others it'll be, you know, the mantras and all that, others it'll be the rituals, you know, like the Dharma and all those different things, samskaras, someone else it'll be the logic. So you see examples of all these. It's just that you may not have as many in the military science, but it's not that it's not there. But Kripa also is the same. Says something. Yeah, so it can be done. You know, it's just like in drama, the director of the play is supposed to be a Brahmin. Everybody else, maybe Shudras, you know, as actors, that's fine. But the director should be a Brahmin, because otherwise if you have a Shudra as a director, yeah, it's a problem. So it's always like that. The head of it's supposed to be, or like in the orchestra, they're all Shudras, but the conductor is supposed to be a Brahmin. He understands the science, how it all goes together, how, you know, the things, what's you know, the proper attitude, and that for therefore he can train or draw that out of them. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. It's not understood. That's what's necessary. You know, or let's say in the police, then your common just beat policeman, he's a Shudra. But the guys who run it, then they have to have that Kshatriya nature. You know what I'm saying? So as it goes up, they have to have that. These higher natures have to be there. You know, or let's say ministers to the king, they know all these areas. So all areas of Vedic knowledge should be represented by these ministers. So they know it, they know how to apply it, whatever their area. But it's the king who's going to make the decisions and actually administrate. They don't. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Is it necessary to send devoted children to go to university or college to learn some skill?
No. Not necessary.
Not necessary.
No. It's something you do if you want, but it's not necessary.
Then where they can learn skills?
Where they can?
Learn the skill.
But what do they need the skill for? Just like, let's say, plumbing. Does a devotee have to learn the plumbing skill to fix a sink? Or can he just call a plumber? So in other words, whatever you teach in the university, you know, that actually makes it outside and becomes practically applied, you can hire. That's why they're out there.
But you need the money to hire those out there.
Yeah, but where do you get the money? From those who make the money. You understand? So you can do pure devotional service without having to worry about any material skill. Why? Because you're not worried about having anything material. But if you're worried about having something material, then you have to be able to make that yourself. Therefore, then you have to have a position within the material energy. So you have to understand is that for devotional service, you don't require that. But if you have material desire and you want for certain facility, you know, it's not that whatever Krishna gives you is you want a particular thing, then yes, you need to do that. But just understand is they'll teach, in theory they'll teach you a skill, but in reality, then when you go out into the business world, someone else who does not have that means in other words, you've gone to the university for 4 years. You go to the job, and if they find you have potential, in 2 weeks they'll teach you how to do the job. Now let's say you didn't go to the university and they find you have potential, in 2 weeks they'll teach you how to do the job. So in other words, in your 4 years, you've just added 4 years of money to the overall economic system. See, does that make sense? Most people will go out and get a job. So that means you're going to university to be a Shudra. In the Vedic system, you learn the art of being a Shudra from someone who was a Shudra, because they're practically doing it. Right? And then, doing that, that means by the time you're, you know, 16, 18, you're already a master in that field, while in the modern, you haven't even started. Right? At 16, 18, you're only just finished high school, where they basically taught you, the first thing they'll tell you in university is forget everything you learned in high school. So that means 12 years of your life was wasted. But because no one wants to be the idiot. We have a story. I'm sure we've all heard the story, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur tells the story. You probably heard the story, right? It means one day in this, you know, out, this circus came to town. Right? And, you know, people were excited, okay, the circus, and they start setting up this circus, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and going on, and months and months and months. Normally a circus comes in a few days, it's up, they do something and go away. This was months and months going on, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and people are really intrigued, wow, what is this? You know, what's going on? So then finally, after months and months, then the time came for this circus to open. Right? So then everybody came, you know, was all crowding around, and a man came out, you know, came out and announced, you know, very soberly, everyone has to stand in a line, everyone's going to go, this circus, you can only go in one at a time to take part. You can't go in with anybody else. So, okay, then they thought, okay, well, it's, you know, it's been, you know, already it's a unique circus, and now it's really getting unique, right? So then the first guy's there in the line, he's very excited, and so then they take him in, and when he and close the door, and when he walks in, then he looks around and the tent is totally empty, nothing inside. And then he says, way over, kind of in the middle of the tent, there's this big, huge guy. He thinks, oh, okay. So he walks over to the big guy, and when he comes over to the big guy, you know, grabs him and says, so you've come to see the circus? And then he takes him and he beats him like anything. And then after beating him for a while, and he's yelling and screaming and all that, then he lets him go, you know, forcibly throws and says, now get out of here. And then he runs to the door and everything and like that. And when he comes out, then all the people are there and they're all excited and all that. Hey, how was it? And all this and that. And what does he tell them? Oh, it was great. It was fabulous. So then, you know, he runs off. And then the next person, then he gets the same treatment. He thinks, well, the first guy said it was fabulous. If I come out and say, you know, like that, I'll look like an idiot. So I'll say it's fabulous. So like this, everybody in the line went through and everybody said it was great. So in the same way, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, the father is there, he's miserable, you know, and all the different things go on in life, but he tells the son, no, this is great, you should get married and, you know, get a job and get everything like that. So that's the reality. Before, when there was a trade, by the time you're 12, you could do whatever anybody in the trade industry today can do. Except for the guys that are the masters. And that way they would be by the time they're 18, 20 or something like that. So that means in the modern society wastes most people's time and money and then claims, oh no, but if you don't do this, you know, how can you get a job? But you don't get a job because of the 12 years you did. So if we're saying those 4 years of college are important, why do they start at 18? Why don't they start at 10, 12? You know what I'm saying? Because what they learn in university, you could learn when you're 12 years old. But if we say that, then no, what about the intellectual? You know, what does that mean? How much focus does a 12-year-old have? Not so much. So therefore, give him 20 books, you know, 20 novels, and in 3 months he's got to write something on all of them. He'd be expert at it because he doesn't have any focus anyway. You know, he just reads through like that, and then he, you know, in 2 days, and he writes his essay. You know what I'm saying? So this is the mistake. It's being propounded that this modern education on these, you know, tertiary levels are something special, but it's the same stuff. You can just look on the internet and see the same knowledge. All it is because there's a teacher, you'll go through it, and without the teacher, there's a good chance you wouldn't. You know what I'm saying? But when you finish, you're not going to use that knowledge anyway to get a job. You know, if you go to medical school, law school, IT, engineering, then maybe you'll get a job in that area. But if you just went to did an arts degree, basically you could say 99% chance you'll never get a degree, you'll never get a job in that area. You know what I'm saying? Unless if it's you know, does that make sense? Unless it's specialized. So that's the whole thing, is that what does it mean? Do they need to go to university? For what? You say, well, they have the skills. What skills? You know what I'm saying? To work selling lingerie in Bloomingdale's, you need a university education?
Is to pronounce it.
Huh?
You have to pronounce it properly.
Yeah, that's true. That's it. But that how long does that take? You know, because I mean, how many things do you have?
You also see these famous like sports stars and film stars who have no educational qualification, but because they've become famous, they get given honorary degrees.
Yeah.
So it's like it values the whole thing. They've never gone through study, but yet they've given these very, very high titles.
Just
because the faculty wants to be associated with these famous people.
Yeah. So it's like that. Or let's say, what do you have? You have a, CMC? Right?
No.
So, now let's say you have somebody way out in the country there, and their family has been doctors for generations, and they know the science so well. With one needle, they can cure anything. But, according to the modern academic program, is he actually qualified?
No,
because he has to go do the CMC where they'll stick 30 needles in you. So, how much reality are we talking about? So the modern education can't even recognize someone who is actually qualified in it, because they consider, unless you've done what we've done, you're not qualified. So how real is it? You know, socially it's prestige, economically, then yes. It's so much more developed. So since that's what we take it as standard, yes, it's more developed. But in actuality, in reality of knowledge and application, it's nowhere near reality. Does that make sense? Okay. You know what I'm saying? That's why then this whole thing is, no, you have to grow up, you have to get a degree, you have to all this, otherwise how you'll make it in the world. People don't make it in the world who are supposedly making it in the world. Making ends meet is not making it in the world. Right? Does that make sense? You know, at the Hong Kong Marina, you have a yacht, now you've made it in the world. But if you're just paying the bills and wondering how we're going to do this or that, you haven't made it. You know what I'm saying? So that person with a degree and the person without degree, they have the same problem. They're not quite making it. You can say, oh, but he's in a better situation of not making it than the other. But the point is he's still the same anxiety and all that. So the point is now if he had saved all that money, he had a facility of all that money that he spent on all his education. If the guy who doesn't have the education had that money, how would he be? He'd be doing a lot better. So is it actually better? You know what I'm saying? That's the point of the gold chain or the iron chain. Oh, we've got gold chains. We're so much better. But you're still bound. So that's the point, is that we have all this knowledge, but the point is that unless it's connected to Krishna consciousness, that's the only thing. And so, to learn Krishna consciousness, that's the harder point. A university degree you can get in 4 years. But in 4 years, how far one's developed in Krishna consciousness? So we can see is that's more the important area to focus. But that emphasis is not given. even our own, when devotees have seminars and all that. Yeah, the preachers, they do it on, you know, Shastra and all that. But so many of the seminars that they charge money for, those are on just material skills. 5-day seminar, 10-day seminar, you know. Yeah, how to manage, how to do this, that, those kind of things.
But even if you give Bhagavatam class, if we charge money...
That's another thing. Then that's not good either.
Not good.
No, why we should be charging money? Can't charge money for Bhagavatam. It's not your Bhagavatam. You know, then they'll have to pay royalties to Sukadev Goswami. You got Sukadev Goswami, you know, you got Sutta Goswami, you know, you got Vyasadev, then you got all the Paramparas.
That's why they charge.
So they're going to pay them all. Yeah, 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 of course. Okay. So, yeah?
So, you mean all the children, they just engage in devotion or service, that's all?
That's all. Yeah, that's all. It's just, they're not doing the elevated thing of getting on a train, riding 2 hours, stacked, packed in with so many other people, then getting to their job and staying there 8 hours with people they hate, work they hate, then getting on 2 hours coming back, and now they're frustrated and freaky like that. So when they walk in and that, then, you know, the wife says something, they get upset, then the wife gets upset, then they argue all night and that, and then the next morning he's back on the train and going to the work. And so that's substance. That's what you're saying. That's what we should be giving our kids. Otherwise, they're just doing that, just devotional service, that just ordinary, common thing that, you know, everybody in the spiritual world is doing that nobody in the material world is doing. Right? You have to get your priorities straight, otherwise you won't understand. Because the point is what's his name? Priyavrata. Right? He was perfect brahmachari like that, fully absorbed in the Lord. He was a paramahamsa. When he did take up Krishna family life and was the emperor of the world, he was still a paramahamsa. But the point is here is someone's not a paramahamsa, they're just a kid running around being crazy, and then they grow up and they get a job, and then they're just doing that job and still running around and being crazy. So then, what's the specialty? You know what I'm saying? Any animal without any education is able to perform their occupation. So that means they're actually less than an animal. Because the animal, it's like this. If you, let's say, if I said, okay, you don't have to, who would be smarter? The guy who's maintaining himself with no investment, or the guy who actually had to spend $1 million to be able to do exactly the same thing to get the same amount? Which would the two would we say is smart? The first one. So that means all the animals are smart, and all the guys that, you know, had to go through their college to get the same work, you know, just so they can eat and sleep. Then, you know, it's like the animal, it's guaranteed, you know, whatever is their what do you call it? Mating season. They're guaranteed sex. Guaranteed. You know, humans can't even get that. They can't guarantee anything. Can't guarantee they'll sleep. Can't do anything. Matt, they can't even protect themselves. Because if you get out your baseball bat and hit the thief that came into your house, then you'll be in court that you, you know, used over, you know, too much force. Yeah, over, you know, your force was too much and all that, and so then you end up in jail. Right? The animal is just there. You come too close, he growls at you. You get more close, he bites you. You know, it's like that, straightforward. So that's what we're saying, is that without Krishna consciousness, it's animal life, and of animal life, it's not even that great. Animals got it better. So therefore, if one looks at it with reality, which we're supposed to be able to, especially if we're, you know, on the intellectual platform, is that therefore, is it that important? So, in other words, if it's felt that, yes, this kind of training is needed for this individual, but then the focus should be on Krishna consciousness.
So then all the children are just, learn Bhakti Shastri, not go to any college.
Means, that means here. after class today, when you go back to your room, then there's these, they generally come in kind of round kind of plastic things. They're a thin white kind of like rolled hard paper, like cardboard, and at the end there's some cotton, that's fluffy cotton that's been rolled onto the ends, right? Both ends. Then you take a few of those, you know, insert one ear into the ear very carefully, clean it very nicely, and then, you know, use the other end when you don't see anything coming off, that ear is done, then do the other ear. Okay? Does that make sense? It's like, after hearing the whole Ramayana, then they go, the question comes up, whose brother is Sita? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, the point is they want a modern education for a modern job, but that doesn't mean that there's no training in Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness is the most important training, because that's human life. What is the job for? To maintain yourself in human life. You have a job that makes money so you can maintain your lifestyle as a human being. If your lifestyle is not as a human being, then what's the big deal of maintaining it? It means you can do it, it's popular, but the point is what's been gained? That's the whole point. So if someone's not Krishna conscious, what's the point? So the emphasis has to be on Krishna conscious training. So that means effort has to be put into that training. But as it goes, how many people put in any effort into the children? Right? The parents, they put in some effort, but most of that effort is just so there's interaction between them and the kids so that they get some taste of rasa. But as far as training goes, then generally that's someone else does. At least in the West, at least in the Christian environment, the priests take care. You know, so they don't have to do, they just have to deal with the kids to enjoy themselves. You know, the priests are supposed to train them and everything like that. And even now that is secular, then that even that doesn't happen. But, you know, it's kind of a tradition. So the main point is the adults just, the parents just enjoy their kids rather than training them. Because they don't want to be too strict, because then later on, what if they feel bad? Or if I train them in devotional service, but what happens if later on they regret it or they don't want to be, then I'll feel bad. But the point is then it's about yourself. It's not about your kids. You know what I'm saying? Because you can say, but you can only train in this much, but what happens if the kid goes beyond your standard of materialism? Okay? The parents, they were smoking marijuana. Okay? Now they find out their teen kids are smoking marijuana. They'll be upset, but it won't be the end of the world. You know, okay, you know, I know these things happen and all that, and we try and this and that, but, you know, really we have to look at it. Is this really good for us and this and that? And is that association you're in really what we want to be in? And, you know, we'll use this kind of soft line. What happens if they find out their kid's taking heroin? Oh, they'll hit the roof, go that freak out, you know, like that. Because they didn't take heroin.
But if they did.
If they did, then that's not a big deal, but you have to be careful, you know, it'll ruin your life, and, you know, this happened to me and this and that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that it's just, when we say I'm just giving them, you know, just practical, it means you're just making them exactly the same kind of materialist you were, that's all. But if they're less of a materialist or more of a materialist, then you'll freak out. So it's just about yourself. Because otherwise, you're supposed to save them from death. That's your job. So now, then one part of death is that they don't starve to death, so you take care and you give them some kind of way so they can maintain themselves. But the whole point is actual saving from death means they don't take birth again. The dying part's not the bad part. The problem is taking birth again and then dying. You know, so born again means you die again. Have you been died again? Yeah. Jesus died, you know. So, does that make sense? So you have to look at it more clearly. That's why there's some chapters in the Bhagavatam that are that blunt. Because otherwise we just go on as, yes, of course, the way I live is the way everybody should live, and so I give the best to my children, so this is the best I know, so I give that. But the point is if it doesn't include Krishna consciousness, what's the point? Therefore, if you're not training them in Krishna consciousness and only training them in how to get an occupational job, then the whole point is what's the difference between that and an animal? Like that. Just because you walk on two legs, but, you know, meerkats walk on two legs. You know. And they're cute. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
The modern universities are basically the Brahminical intelligence is applied, which is supposed to be at the level of pure goodness, to ignorance. It's supposed to be at the pure goodness, but it is because it's an ignorance, that's why the modern universities are like.
Yeah, because then they're atheistic. So the whole point is then also in that think is then you become atheistic, because then it's about themselves, because it's about a supreme, then you never actually reach a elevated platform. It means you're higher up in the food chain, but you can never have a big false ego, because actually it's about the supreme and you don't actually know that much. You know what I'm saying? So it means you may have, but it won't be considered proper. So, therefore, ignorance is there as you get rid of the supreme, and so therefore they become the supreme. And then they fight over who's written more papers, so therefore who is the supreme. No, it just goes like that. So is this more clear? Like that. So, there may be individual children who, yes, getting a university education works for them. But if they're not Krishna conscious, then what has been done is apparent. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. Right? The birds are out there, they're feeding them, taking care, see that they know how to fly, then showing them how to go out and, you know, find whatever it is that they eat. And once they've done that, then hurry ball, they're gone. So, you know. So they have a much more efficient system. So what's the difference? We're supposed to learn about God consciousness. So that ability to become educated, you know, in a formal environment, that's meant for God consciousness. Learning any skill there is, you learn that by association. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. So if all you have is the school and not practical, means it's not practical.
Well, the children have to be self-sufficient anyway.
They have to be self-sufficient, but the whole point is self-sufficiency, is that an occupational skill or is that a character skill? Is that due to character or is that due to some particular knowledge?
Both is.
Is it both?
Yeah.
There are people with no knowledge, like the kid on the street. He has no knowledge, but he's self-sufficient. In fact, you worked very hard and went to so many shops to get that wallet, and then worked very hard to fill it up with all those credit cards and everything else like that. And just by practical knowledge, he has the wallet. So all your knowledge, why does he have your wallet and not you? Right? Because you didn't know to buy those kind of, how you say, military pants that have the pockets that the things fold inside each other so they can't steal your wallet. And if you're so smart, why are you walking there anyway? You know what I'm saying? So this thing is, you're saying that because you're trying to give a validity to the modern education. But if we look at it, you know, in the last 200 years, people are there. But before that, means there was no society. Right?
society.
Hmm? So go back 100 years. Were people eating? Were they alive? How developed was this system? Right? Right? The Chinese system on time and astrology and medicine and that. It was way more developed than what is there now. But how did they do that? Because they didn't have modern universities where they learned something impractical. And it was just based on knowledge. It was actually based on practical. And the society was glorious. Does that make sense?
We're already in the modern society, and we cannot.
No, but no. You're saying we can't go back. We can't go back. Okay, can't go back to what?
And we cannot go back to the older days.
You can't go back to the older days. All these foreigners coming to China to learn Chinese medicine. You can't go back to the older days.
They have to learn Chinese medicine in the college.
But the whole point is that those foreigners are coming because of what? And like this, okay, all these businesses in the world are coming and investing in China. Why? Because labor is cheaper there. And now you're telling me all those guys that are doing the cheap labor, they all have university degrees?
No.
So then all the China's money, all the outside coming in for students, it's all coming because of their culture. Nothing to do with modern education, like zero. That's the reality. You have to remember is how much you get paid at the university, a plumber gets the same amount. Remember that. When you say, oh, but they have to maintain themselves. You really want to take care of your kids, make them a plumber or a roofer, you know, an electrician. They make the money. Teachers, since when do they make money? Unless you're in Finland, they make good money because they're smart. Does that make sense? So if we really want to talk bottom line, you know, there's one devotee in Australia. He goes in and they have the trucks. After the garbage trucks, they have to clean the trucks. But no one wants to clean the trucks because of all the, you know, modern diseases and that. So this one devotee, this was back in the 80s. They would pay him $1,500 a week to clean the trucks. $1,500. That means $6,000 a month back in the 80s, simply to clean a garbage truck. He just gets in there with a hose and shoots the thing out. You understand? So if you really want to talk like that, then you might reconsider what you train your kids in. Because if it's about maintaining yourself and making money, then you should look in those areas. You understand? So the point is because of our attachment to, no, my occupation in the modern academy, that's the real thing. That's why the problem's there. Because most people in the world maintain themselves not by what degree they have from the university. Right, it's only an idea the businessman has that if you could go through 4 years, that means you're a little more focused. But if they could find the focused people without going to the university, they'll take them. That makes sense? Okay, we have to stop for a break. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Govinda.